Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Namaste Radio. The intent of our programming is to increase awareness, inspire loving action, and ignite transformation and healing in our listeners, and through them, our world. Namaste Radio is brought to you by Namaste Publishing. Please join its interactive spiritual community. Communicate directly with authors, guest bloggers, and others like yourself who are spiritually seeking a better way of living. Connect, make friends, and be one with our new Namaste Global community at namastepublishing.com. And now, please welcome your host for this hour, Marie Bernard, on Namaste Radio, radio that will change your life. Good evening. Welcome to Namaste Radio. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. Tonight on the show, we have Michael Brown. He is the author of The Presence Process. Before we get started with that fabulous interview, I just want to remind you that next week, Eckhart Tolle is going to be on the show. And if you would like to have a chance to speak with him live and ask him a question, you have just a day or two to submit your question. We're going to be selecting three listeners to speak with him live on the air in the last half hour of the show. So go to namastepublishing.com, and under the discussions heading, you will find a link to where you can ask Eckhart Tolle your question. So good luck with that, and I hope to see you next week here on Namaste Radio. Now, Michael Brown, he is from South Africa, and he was living what he called a blissfully unconscious life as a music journalist, and then he developed an acutely painful neurological condition for which conventional medicine had neither cure nor relief. Now, this caused him to set out on a 9-year journey of self-healing, and consequently, he has written this book, The Presence Process. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you, and good morning from a somewhat early South Africa.
It's early in South Africa. It's 7 o'clock here in on the West Coast. Well, thank you for being with us.
You're welcome. It's about 2 minutes past 4 in the morning here.
Oh, my goodness.
You're having a nice early...
Are you normally up this early?
I used to be very disciplined. I used to get up every morning this early, but I'm not that disciplined anymore. But I really do like it when I get up and enjoy this quiet time.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for waking up so early to speak with us this evening. And my first question for you, we're talking about the presence process. How much of your day is spent in the present?
Well, to me, it's a continual task of navigating in and out of the present, because we live in a time-based world. So things are continually pulling us in and out of time, into time and out of time. The body and the emotional state is pulling us out of time, and then the world is pulling us into time, because mostly the world is functioning in time. You know, planning for tomorrow. Figuring out things that happened yesterday that could have been different. So this idea of living consistently in the moment, that's not really what it's about for me. It's about continually responding to the moment in a way that brings me present with the moment whenever I'm able to be. So I don't see myself as living as a 100% present moment awareness, but that's not my intent either. You know, my intent is to respond to the moment in a way that it brings me presence. But also to realize that we're living at a time when we're processing a lot of generational stuff. And as we process that, there's no way to process emotional stuff and not become reactive. So everyone is prone to some level of reactivity. If I get set up and I become angry, and I get set up to actually integrate some anger, then I'm going to feel that anger, and as I enter that anger, because it's something from the past, it's going to cause me to enter an altered state in which I'm not quite present. But my training as I go through my own processing is to train myself to respond to that and to integrate that and to return to a present state, you know, through the work.
Well, Michael, one of the things that you talk about in your book leading up to the actual presence process in preparation for the process is how the consequences of doing the process may be different for everyone. Some people may experience certain physical benefits or emotional benefits, but there aren't any set rules as to what you're going to definitely experience. But for you, I mean, what led you on this journey was this illness and this acute pain that you were suffering from. Has the presence process alleviated that?
I don't have that condition at all anymore. So it completely integrated what that was. And it was the integration of that condition that revealed to me much of how my human experience is manufactured. So the consequence for me has been living from a greater point of responsibility. But, I still have a very human experience like everybody else. I still have days which it's, like just recently, the last 3 days I've been incredibly uncomfortable in my body. Fortunately, I have a ways of gauging things. My friend put a computer program on my computer, and I was able to see that over the last 3 days, the Earth's magnetic field has been bouncing around the most for ages that we've seen, and that will have an impact on a level on us if we have a level of foul perception. So, for example, the past 3 days, I've been extremely uncomfortable in my body, sometimes to the point that I want to scream, I'm so uncomfortable. And in the past, what I would have done was I would have entered a story about it. I would have said, it must be because of this, and therefore I would have acted out that behavior. Now I'm able to sit with that feeling in my body and to allow it to be and to know that it's a valid experience. So prior to doing all this work, I would have invalidated my experience. I would have tried to sedate and control it in some way. I would have then tried to replace it with a feeling I would rather, or an experience I would rather be having. And so I would enter very reactive and become inauthentic experience. Whereas now, whatever life throws at me, because it throws the same things at me as it throws everybody. But I'm learning, and this is also an art form, becoming responsible for our experience is an art form. And so I'm slowly perfecting my art form of being able to respond, to take responsibility for the resonance of each moment I'm in. And that's primarily what this work does. I mean, we all enter it with some sort of destination in mind. I want to be happy ever after. I want to be full of joy all the time. I want to be abundant. But these are all mental concepts that are put in our heads, whether they're put in our heads by spiritual movements or by books we read, et cetera, that want to give us a destination other than the experience we're in right in this moment. And what this work is really about is saying the experience we're having in this moment is absolutely valid. And if we respond to it, then it's a sort of a nutrition that we can digest and receive great insight and teaching and et cetera from. So it's, my life has been turned around 180 degrees by doing this work. I don't have to run into the world looking for what I require to move me forward. I know that in each moment I'm being given it directly through my own experience.
Well, Michael, first of all, before I ask any more questions, I just want to put that number out there. If you would like to get on the air and ask Michael Brown a question, the number is 1-347-202-0129. That's 347-202-0129. And if you would like to get on the air, please press the number 1 when you hear the commands, so that I know that you actually want to get on the air and you're not just listening over the phone, because sometimes people just call up to listen. So, Michael, part of the process, there's a few different, I guess, segments or a few different parts of the process, and one of them is the 15 minutes of meditative breathing at the beginning and end of each day, and another one is, an affirmation. And I have questions about the affirmation. You suggest to repeat this statement throughout the day whenever you find yourself without, you know, anything occupying your mind. And, I mean, if you're repeating an affirmation, are you really in the present moment? I mean, how does that benefit the reader?
Well, it's only really for the movement through the procedure itself. I call the affirmations more responses, mental response. And what happens is each session of the presence process is a body of insight. And the response that's given for each week triggers that body of insight. So as we're moving through the procedure, one of our intents is to bring up our emotional imprints that are out of our awareness. And for many of us, when we enter the presence process, we actually move through it firstly and very physically and then very mentally. And usually people find when they do it the third time is when they really get down to causal emotional stuff. But for most of us, when we enter this work, the way the work comes up for us, or it shows it's one of its signs for us, is an extreme mental activity. And that's one of the common email questions I get, is people saying, you know, since I started the presence process, my mental state has gone crazy, and what do I do to stop this? And one doesn't want to stop it. That's going to happen. But what the mental responses do is it enables us to trigger within us an awareness of the body of the work that we're currently focused on. Once we leave the work of the presence process, those mental affirmations are not particularly useful, because by then we should be able to tune in rather to the felt aspect of our experience, which is where we're going to gain the most presence from. But it's not, you know, not everyone can go directly to the felt aspect of the experience, because for most of us, we've completely sedated and suppressed an awareness of the felt aspect of our experience. And I'll even get emails from people saying to me, I'm feeling very angry about this procedure because I can't feel anything. And so they're in a completely mental place where they can describe that they're feeling angry, but for some reason can't get in with the felt aspect of the experience. So it's a gradual movement from, you know, the physical, creating physical presence comes with the breathing. Creating mental presence comes with the response. But the intent of the work is to take us to a place where we completely trust our felt response in each moment as the point of the work.
Now, Michael, there are, like you mentioned, sometimes you get emails about people feeling angry, and you're moving through the presence process, the intent is to move through these emotional barriers, and so it can bring up a lot of emotion. I'm wondering if there's a bad time to do the process or a good time. I mean, say you're in the midst of changing jobs or moving or going through a divorce or recovering from the loss of a loved one. I mean, is that the time to start the presence process?
Well, you know, the experience that we're having right now is the one that's required for us, and it's never going to that's never going to change. You know, moving from one country to another, or being in the midst of a relationship change, isn't something that's not required. It's like, okay, let me get this over with, because this shouldn't really be happening. And when life is happening the way it's happening, then I can do the process. So, you know, I would say to anyone who picks up this book, that in the moment they pick up the book, just as they was required to pick up the book in that moment, the experience happening around them is also required. And that entering the process within whatever experience is happening in the moment to us is the best time to enter it. What I do say in the book is be very wary about about the reactivity that can arise in the process. And this normally arises when someone isn't doing the process as it's instructed. For example, if we're not doing our breathing twice a day, you know, if we're not doing our reading materials, if we're not using the support structure of the process, what can happen is we can do our breathing arbitrarily. And what some people do is they do their breathing, you know, once a day, and sometimes miss out 2 days and feel, oh, I need to make it up, and then do an hour session. And what happens is they can provoke deep emotional response to enter their experience. And then out of that deep emotional response, they can react to that and by trying to make changes in their outside life to feel better about what's happening to them. And that's when I say in the process is don't make major life changes when you're in the process. But if major life changes come to you, then absolutely absorb them as being required. But the only time to do the process is now. There's no later. You know, we can always leave things to later, but now is always the best time to do it. And actually, it's an entire procedure of undoing. The only thing that one is really doing in the process is sitting and breathing for 15 minutes twice a day, which we're doing all day anyway. This is just asking us to breathe consciously. And reading the reading material in each chapter, which in the new version of the presence process has been cut down significantly. I realized when I was re-editing the work that I was giving people a hell of a lot of stuff to read each week. So that's been cut down drastically and more focused. You know, so really it's doing the mental responses, the reading work and the breathing, and actually really there's not much doing in this process. So it can't get in the way of anything. And in fact, it's going to support the unfolding of our life experience as it is currently unfolding.
So two questions. The first is, when does the new edition of the Presence Process come out?
Soon.
Soon. Okay.
It should be, I haven't received any dates, but I would imagine May, June, July is when we'll see activity on that front. But I haven't heard anything directly from Constance yet about any particular date.
Okay. Well, we'll let you know when it comes out here on Namaste Radio, and we'll probably have you on again, Michael, as well. And I'm not quite clear as to how to do the readings each day. Maybe I shouldn't say do because it's not about doing, but are you reading the chapter every single day, or do you read it once?
No. I've had someone who actually emailed me after the process and said, this is the hardest thing I've ever done. It's really hard reading that whole section, the whole section every day for 7 days. I'm thinking that's it. No, one is, you can sit down and read the whole section in one go, which is good if you have the time to sit and do that at some time in the beginning of the week, which may take an hour or so. But actually what's really required is to get through that section during the week and to read a bit of it every day. I have, as I've said, I have made those sections shorter so that they're easier to get through. But the reading material, it's all just there to support and to trigger an awareness of our emotional state. And the reading consistently moves our attention to the causal point of our experience, which is to the emotional imprinting aspect of our experience, and reinforces the experience we're going through in that moment. Because the presence process in itself is taking us on a journey that's going from the physical through the mental through the emotional. And we get to the emotional part of it in session 7, 8, and 9, where it really starts to focus on the emotional. But before then, we're moving from the physical, mental, emotional. And what the reading material is doing is continually supporting that journey. Also, the role it plays is that when we start bringing unintegrated emotions into our awareness, when we go into states of fear, anger, and grief, these are states of altered states of consciousness. And what they are is they're states that are unconscious to us. And so as we enter them, we literally become unconscious. And that's why we require a supportive structure that continually reminds us of what is happening to us as we're going through this procedure. That's what the mental response is for. The mental response reminds us what's going on. Because when we're in a state of anger, and I'm sure you've had this experience, where someone triggers you and you become angry, and then you behave in a certain way, and then that anger passes, and then you look at your behavior and you ask yourself, which monster was that that possessed me and caused me? And you see, once we're in that state of altered state of unintegrated emotion, that's when we require support to bring to our awareness. And that was the training I did for many years in the ceremonial work. The ceremonial work was there to teach me how to enter a state of an altered state of consciousness and simultaneously remain in a disciplined state of activity. And so for quite a few years, I've trained how to stay conscious in an altered state. And through that training, it also taught me how to stay conscious when I was in anger, fear, and grief, and to be able to perceive the mechanics of these states so that I could find a way to start working with them and integrating them within myself. And that's what a responsive state is, that is being taught to the person who reads the book and does this procedure, is how do we stay conscious in an altered state? And that's going to become even more valuable to us as we move through the changes that are happening in the world, because it can take one news broadcast to knock a whole nation into an altered state, you know, of getting everyone into a state of process where people have a choice in that moment to either become reactive or to become responsive. And we just had an exact moment like that in our country. And we're going to be having moments like that all, you know, all over the planet. And where we're either going to run into the traffic, or we're going to sit still and process what it is that's coming up for us.
Michael, we have a question here from Luke McDuke in the chat room. He would like to know if you read spiritual books at this point, or have you moved on from this mental body work?
No, I read. I read, but I don't sit down and read books. I haven't really sat down and read books since the mid-90s, because not because I don't want to, but because I discovered that my experience was the best book for learning anything that I wanted to learn. And so, and also I found books became too slow. I don't know why. Maybe I'm just lazy, but I found books became too slow. But what I do is I have what's called a toilet library, and my toilet library is where I have a book lying, and whenever I go into the bathroom, if I'm in the bathtub or on the toilet, I will pick up the book and read a paragraph and just digest that paragraph. So I always have a book lying around that I'm slowly going through. But I have, you know, I do say no to people who ask me to read their books and write recommendations, because to me, to sit down and read someone's whole book is very, very difficult. And that's why I'm in awe of people that, you know, read The Presence Process, and people that not only read it once, but read it twice, and then go through the procedure more than one time, because it's an immense amount of stuff. But I myself, no, I don't read very much anymore at all, I must admit.
Okay, well, thank you for answering that question, and thank you to, I hope I'm saying your name right, Luke McDuke in the chat room. If you are listening to this live and you would like to get into the chat room, I would recommend that you sign up to be a member of Blog Talk Radio. It is free, and then you can join in the chat and you can ask questions, or you can chat with other listeners as the show is going on. And again, if you want to get on the air and ask a question, the number is 1-347-202-0129. I do have a caller on the line. Just a reminder, if you do want to ask a question, please press the number 1 so that your hand comes up on my switchboard. I'm not sure if this person is just listening or wants to ask a question, but you are on the air. You're calling from all ones. Hi. Caller? Okay, well, I guess they're not wanting to ask a question. Well, thank you anyway for calling in. So, Michael, I'm curious now. It's as I'm reading The Presence Process, and we're talking about how these emotions can come up and you have to feel it to heal it. And it's a scary thought to think about battling all of those emotions from our childhood and all of those things that trigger us and cause us pain. How do you have any suggestions for people who are at the beginning of the book right now going, oh, I don't know if I want to get into this. I don't know if I want to walk that path, even though the other side, it might be helpful. It seems like a scary path to walk.
Well, actually, it's actually the reverse, because what happens is until we do this work, we are living a life in which we are battling our emotions. We just don't realize that we're living in a state of continual battle, and I call that the two-fisted punch. We're in a ring with, you know, in a boxing ring with ourselves, and we're continually doing this two-fisted punch in which These suppressed emotional states of surfacing are attempting to surface all the time. And what they do is they surface as uncomfortable, usually if we're physically transfixed, They'll surface as uncomfortable events. If we're very mentally transfixed, they will surface as mental thought processes, and what they will do is cause us to become upset or to feel uncomfortable in our body or feel uncomfortable in our social environment or in our workplace or in our relationship. And what we're continually doing is the two-fisted punch. And the first punch is to sedate and control whatever it is I'm feeling. And then, which involves all sorts of behaviors that become addictive behaviors. And the other punch is to replace what I'm feeling with another feeling. And that also leads to all sorts of addictive, inauthentic behaviors. So until we come to the work of integrating our emotional imprinting, we are in a continual battle, and that's what we don't realize. And that's where the suffering is. We don't have to enter suffering to do this work. The suffering is in resisting what's going on within us. Once we enter this work and see what it's about, it's not easy work, but there is great ease that comes in knowing that whatever comes up within me emotionally, I know how to contain this experience and allow it to integrate. There's actually nothing for us. This is the funny thing, is to process our emotions, there's really nothing for us to do. It's really a case of undoing, because the emotional body, if it's allowed to be, will move through its process of into a process of integration absolutely naturally. We don't have to show our emotions how to integrate themselves, just as we don't have to show a banana how to digest when we eat it. What we have to do is to learn to get out of the way of the emotions that we've been sedating and controlling, stop sedating and controlling them so they can flow to a point of completion. So, and also the nature of this procedure is it's very compassionate. And so we are greatly, if we listen to to the instructions of the book, and first of all, you know, when we go through it the first time, do it to the book, then we will be supported. The only people that really struggle with this procedure, and they usually all have the same thing going on, are the people that want to fix everything at once. They want to complete generations of emotional imprinting work in 10 weeks. The book is very clear. We have to be very clear about our intent when we go into this work. It's about gentleness. It's about allowing things to unfold organically. It's about receiving our unfolding experience as if it's required and valid, and not trying to do it all at once. It's not necessary to. As I often say, it's not about perfection. It's just about participation. And so there's a great ease that comes into our life experience when we do this work, because it's the end of our suffering, you know, and our resistance to what's going on, and it's the beginning to a conscious participation in being responsible for the quality of our experience. So this idea that we have to go through this massive amount of suffering, I think that's an old school idea that comes from the days when, you know, we used to do sorts of therapies and what I call release work as opposed to resolution work. Release work is where I allow my fear, my anger, my rage to come up, and then I grab a stick and I beat a pillow and I scream and shout about my parents, you know, how I hated them, and I'm afraid now that when I do this work that sort of behavior is going to come up in the supermarket when I'm shopping or at work. And that's not the case. This is not that release work. This is resolution work, which is very different from that type of work.
Well, thank you for that, Michael. And you were mentioning earlier about the addictive behaviors that we get involved in to suppress our emotions. And
yes,
you take a very interesting viewpoint of recovery from alcohol and drug addiction. You call it,
yes,
recovery, the act of quiet desperation, I believe, and correct me if I'm misquoting,
yes,
you. Can you?
Yeah, well, it's yes. Well, it's in the word. The word says recovery, which means to recover something. And, you know, I myself have explored both the programs like the AA and the NA. And quite frankly, in my explorations of those, I've never been into a more depressing environment, you know, in which people stand up and they continually project their drama and are applauded for their drama. And yes, it may assist. You know, I see that people that stop drinking and go to these support programs end up smoking and drinking massive amounts of coffee. And people that, you know, manage to kick their heroin and go to these support programs are on painkillers, and then they stand up and they affirm their addictive state by saying, I am my addiction, you know, I am an alcoholic, or I am a drug addict. And they keep affirming that as if it's a disease they have to carry for the rest of their lives. So I'm saying that this work is, I'm saying that there might be a place for that, and it might be supportive, and you know, it might stop someone drinking, but it's not, doesn't stop them, you know, going to chain smoking and eating food and all the stuff. And if we don't actually go and take care of the causal point of our addiction, then whatever we do to suppress and sedate that, we call, you know, being in recovery. And a person in recovery is, for example, if a person's been in recovery for 20 years, and you can give that person one drink and boom, they're back to square one. And in other words, nothing has been accomplished. All they've done is quietly treaded water in a quietly desperate state in which they're still sedating and suppressing themselves and having to control their behavior to have what's called a normal life. And what I'm saying is an addiction isn't a disease. An addiction is a consequence of immense emotional turmoil that's taking place, and that when that emotional turmoil is integrated, there is no person doesn't go running around looking for the medication that they were using to self-medicate themselves. And so that, you know, for me, there's a difference between recovery, which is the behavior I go through, where I usually become addicted to a group, and in that group I affirm my uncomfortable state continually, and everyone else affirms my comfortable state, and they all congratulate me for sort of sedating and suppressing it in a different way. And that, to me, is recovery. And that can go on for our whole lives, but then we never live. Or we can go into discovery, and discovery is when I go and discover what is the causal point that caused me to adopt that behavior. Because no baby is born and, you know, gets up and goes for the bottle or goes for the needle, or that behavior is not there when we come into the world. It only comes in as a consequence of what happens in those childhood years. And so discovery is about going back to that place and unraveling those dysfunctional patterns in the emotional body so they can flow again, stop causing the resistance in our system, and so that we stop that completely dismantles the behaviors around sedating and controlling that inner turmoil.
Well, Michael, I'm feeling like I know that there are millions of people who are involved with Alcoholics Anonymous, as an example, and,
yes,
and other 12-step programs, who would be screaming if they heard you say that. I mean, is it fair to say that 12-step programs are a step along the way, and perhaps the presence process is another way to get deeper? I mean, if someone is so out of control that, you know, they can't think clearly because they're so wasted all the time, I mean, wouldn't a 12-step program be effective for them, at least on some level?
Well, absolutely. It will be absolutely effective for them, and it will enable them to kind of live their life. But this work isn't for that person, and that's why, you know, I've said over and over again, this work isn't for everybody. Not everybody is going to develop emotionally to the point where they're going to take responsibility for the quality of the experience. And I do. I get emails of 12-step people shouting at me often because I have a stance, you know, about this work where I say that this work is the 13th step of the 12-step program. And it's this work is for people that intend to move beyond a state of addiction. And so to me, there's no difference between addiction to alcohol and addiction to a group that stops me drinking. And that's fine if that's what a person feels comfortable staying in that place. And for many people, they are. For many people, there are going to be, for many people, pharmaceuticals are going to be what enables them to go to work. And that's going to be the end point, because they're not going to get beyond that state. But for many people in the world at the moment, there is an opportunity to completely awaken from these addictive states. Even reactivity, even getting angry is an addiction. Living from a point of fear is an addiction. All these addictive states. And so what this work is represents a step beyond that condition. So I'm quite uncompromising, but then that's my job. My job is to say, here's the 13th step, if you choose it. But at the same time, if people don't choose it, I don't have a problem with that at all. I think everyone's experience is valid as it is. And I don't think that this work is for everybody. And I've said that over and over again. There are people that do require constant facilitation. There are people that do require constant counseling, whose emotional bodies are so wrecked that there's no ways you can leave them alone to process their own stuff. But this work is not for those people. This work is for the people who have got to a point where they've done a level of work where they are able to now process their own emotions. And those people know who they are, and they come to this work. This book comes to them. It's a natural procedure. It's an organic procedure of this work finding them and they finding this work.
So, Michael, I was looking on your website. Did you want to give us your website in case listeners are wanting to visit it?
If they just type in the Presence Portal into any search site, it's www.thepresenceportal.com.
Okay, wonderful. And we can also find you through Namaste Publishing as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I was reading your Presence Portal, and you were talking about, you were answering someone's question, and I would imagine a lot of people pick up the Presence Process with the intention, and you do mention this in the book, with the intention of fixing things. Oh, I'm experiencing financial lack in my life, and I know that there's something
right.
emotional going on, so I'm going to do the Presence Process so I can get the money, or do the Presence Process so I can get
right.
the relationship, or whatever. And you mentioned that the Presence Process is not the secret or the law of attraction.
Right.
How is it different than that, in your opinion?
Well, the Presence Process is not about giving us what we want. It's about helping us tune into receiving what we require. And what we want is very different from what we require. What we require is what enables us to evolve as a species. Right? What we want is what makes us feel better about our lives. So normally someone that would have extreme destination consciousness, which is everyone who comes to this work on some level has that. For example, I entered this work because, you know, what I wanted was to fix myself of the pain. And when in the early days of my journey, if I could have found somebody to just take my pain away, I would have taken that opportunity immediately. I wouldn't have questioned it because that's what I wanted. I wanted to be out of the pain. But that wasn't what was required. What was required was for me to have that pain to a point that I learned how to understand and how I manufacture my own experience, and to learn how to make a causal adjustment so that I could take responsibility for the quality of my experience. And only at that point did the pain become integrated into myself. So it's the same as for many people going to the secret, it's about I can have whatever house I want. I can have whatever companion I want. I can have whatever job I want. I can have as much money as I want. I've just got to want it enough and want it the right way. And that behavior is coming out of the emotional body, of discomfort in the emotional body, saying that the experience I'm having right now is not required. It's not what I want. I want something else. And it's that wanting, manipulated behavior. To me, that's also, you know, the heart of what we call capitalism, that everything around me is just capital for me to get what I want. And I can have as much of it as I want as long as I don't break any laws. But in the end, what happens is we end up raping the planet and our environment of all natural resources just so that we can have what we want. This work is not about that. This work is about opening us to tuning in to receiving what we require, which is being given to us in every moment if we're just able to recognize it. And what we require right now is to resolve those emotional signatures that are causing us to live in states of want that are really just become states of greed, and all the things that go with it, greed and manipulation. And so this is not about, this work is not about getting you the house that you want, the companion that you want, the amount of money that you want. This work is about turning you into your life as it's unfolding right now, learning to recognize what the food is that's being fed to us through our continual unfolding experience, learning to digest that food, knowing that that will take us into the most beneficial experience that we can have as a human being at the moment. And for some people, the most beneficial experience they might be able to have is to live in the biggest house, have the most beautiful companion, have the most money in the bank, have the fastest car, all those sorts of things. That might be what's required for them, and so they will gravitate towards that. But if everybody enters that experience, which everybody's trying to, we can see the consequence in the world at the moment. So this work is not about giving everybody what they want. It's about, as I've said, tuning us into being able to receive what's being given to us in each moment for our highest growth as a evolving species.
So it sounds like what you're saying, Michael, is that the presence process helps us to more qualitatively appreciate what we have in our lives as opposed to the quantity of getting and getting.
Yes, because once I realize that, you know, when I get up every day, whatever I'm feeling in the moment when I get out of bed and I walk into my day, which can often be uncomfortable feelings, strange feelings, unfamiliar feelings, that's my food. That's my emotional food. And so if I can start to digest that, instead of getting up in the day and I'm feeling a certain way and I figure, well, I need to get a better job because I don't feel good about getting up today, or I feel, you know, unpleasant today, so obviously it's my companion. I'm bored with being my companion, or maybe I just need a bigger house. And so what we're doing is we're completely living in a state of denying our experience based on these emotional signatures or these felt experiences that are arising. What happens is when we start to integrate our emotional experiences and develop our felt perception, we start to realize, A, that when I integrate my emotional signatures, I get so much insight about myself and about my world and about my journey out of what's happening to me in the moment, that I start to realize that every day is given to me on purpose. It's a divinely given thing. You know, it's like what in ancient religious literature we'd call it our daily bread. Everyone is given their daily bread. No one wants the daily bread. They want the fantastic pudding or something else rather than what's given. It's only when I embrace what's given to me each day as required and I allow myself to digest that I realize what an absolutely astounding journey I'm already on, that everything has been given to me in the moment, that I am in the right place. And it's through digesting what's happening to me at the moment that anything greater truly opens up. When I don't take that approach, when I take the approach of controlling and manipulating my environment to get what I want, and everyone's had this experience, I can change my job and go and get what I think is a better one. But once I've been in that one for a few weeks or months, I will start to feel the same way as I did in the past one. Or I can get a better looking relationship, or I can get a new car or a new cell phone or, you know, whatever I want, but it's just going to leave me with the same level of dissatisfaction or return because I'm not eating the food that's been deliberately given to me every day to grow as a being. So I'll say that the presence process is about our evolution as beings in this world, not about satisfying ourselves as doings in the world, you know. So that's an essential difference of what it is. It's really about greeting the human being at where we are at our point of evolution, which at the moment our next level of evolution is emotional integration, and it's the development of felt perception, because unless we develop felt perceptions as individuals and collectively, we don't have any future as a species at all.
Thank you, Michael. And we have a couple of questions in the chat room. The first one is, do you still do your consciously connected breathing or meditation on a regular basis?
No, I don't do the consciously connected breathing on a regular basis, and I've expressed to people in question and answers that this is a tool. For example, I don't walk around with a screwdriver in case and I need to use it at some point. And it's when I need the screwdriver, I go to the drawer and pick it up because I know it's there and I know how to use it now. So the consciously connected breathing is a tool. And also the intent, the most powerful way for me to live is rather to stay dedicated to felt perception. So my main practice is to take note of my level of what I'm feeling in each moment and to respond to that as valid rather than to react to it. And so my practice is I watch my thoughts. If I start going into weird stories, you know, reactive victim victor type stories in my head, then I immediately go, hang on a moment, what's going on here on a felt level? I go down into that felt level and I'll sit with that. So I have things that I do every day. I have, you know, my practices are more like listening practices and just being with the moment practices that I do that are as important to me as going and doing a physical workout. That, you know, that I have to do something physical in my body every day because I do so much of this mental work. But these are all tools. The entirety of the presence process isn't a path or a procedure that one incorporates and consciously, deliberately does this work every day for the rest of one's life. My intent with this is that you go through the process maybe one, two, or three times, and then you start to live from that point of response. You don't have to say, okay, now let me process my emotion. Where am I feeling it in my body? And now let me feel it in my body. Now, all of that stuff is going to become an automatic way of being in the world, where we're being conscious of our emotional state, allowing it to keep flowing by responding to it rather than reacting to it. So that's my main practice. My main practice is to take note of what I'm feeling and to respond to it. And I find that when I apply that practice, then all the other things fall into place naturally. When I don't apply that practice, then my other behaviors become behaviors of sedating and controlling the things that are going to be good for me.
Thank you for answering that question. And Jonathan T. would like to know, what type of people do you enjoy spending your days with when you're not alone? He gets the idea from your writing that the people living near you aren't into this type of work.
I enjoy cat people. So I have a lot of cat people around me. Well, you know, yeah, my cats. cat people. Well, you know, I don't have a particular type of person that I like to be around. And at the moment, it's like I am in a place at the moment where the words emotional integration are just not part of the vocabulary of the community I'm in. Excuse me. The community I'm in is in a very physical place, kind of striving to enter some sort of mental place. You know, so most people here are more concerned about, you know, how do I earn money and have enough food at the end of the month? You know, how do I pay for my electricity bill? You know, I live in a place where there's almost 90% employment, where there's a lot of alcoholism, where there's a lot of suffering going on a very physical level. And when people are on that level, they don't really, you know, concern themselves with, you know, things like emotional integration and stuff. And I'm in an environment at the moment where I'm not engaging with the people who speak my language or who are interested really in the things that I'm interested in. And I'm here because that's what's required for me, because you know, I'm on a journey at the moment. I've been through a journey of figuring out, am I doing what I'm doing in this world because people like it and because it's successful and because, you know, it gets a good response from people? Or am I doing what I'm doing in the world because this is really what I want to be doing? And I had to really find that out when I came here to where I'm living, is that there's no one here to pat me on the back and go, wow, great emotional integration, Michael, or great, you know. No one cares. And You know, for a while it was difficult for me to actually do my work because there was no, the world wasn't supporting it. The world wasn't saying, well done, and talk about what you do and all this sort of stuff. And I needed that experience in myself because, you know, I stumbled into the presence process. I stumbled in it through my pain, through trying to alleviate my pain, and then eventually found things out, and I eventually started sharing them with people, and I eventually wrote a book, and the book got published, and then I went out and spoke about it. And the next thing, I was traveling around the States and Canada continually talking about this, and I one day asked myself, is this what I really want to do? I mean, am I just doing it because it's happening? Did I ever choose to do this? And so I think I needed to go through this experience where I could, you know, I think it was only really in October, November last year that I chose to do this work, because I, for quite a few months, I chose not to. I said, I don't want to do this. You know, I'll do my correspondence and stuff, but I don't want to do this work. I've had enough of this work. I've had enough of talking about this. And then I realized from, you know, just being with myself in an empty space with no one around me supporting what I was doing or anything like that, I realized that this is really important to me. To me, it's really important to me, and that I really love to do it. And then I sort of I chose to do this work, and then, you know, now discerning of how I want to express it in the world, rather than just, you know, running along this thing that's happening. So that was required for me, and I'm sure that, you know, having chosen it again, it will bring me again into an environment where there are more people that are involved in it. But at the moment, you know, I enjoy the company of people around me, but I also spend most of my time alone at the moment, and that seems to be what's required. And fortunately, I am my best friend, so I don't suffer too badly from that.
Well, thank you for spending the hour with us this evening. We just have a few minutes left in the show, so I'm wondering, before we talk about Alchemy of the Heart and your upcoming book study, is there anything that you would like to leave us with about the presence process?
Well, I would, for those people that have already done the work, I encourage you to look at the new version. It's an up-to-date, super-duper new model. It's very efficient. It's designed to really stop all the mental activity in that the original process worked a lot with the mental body, and this new version of the presence process really goes directly to the causal point right from the start of the book and keeps us there. So it's way more efficient. So there's that to look forward to. But really, the presence process is just about a way to validate that we are in the right place, in the right moment, having the experience we're supposed to be having. And the procedure will teach us how to engage our lives accordingly. And when we do that, there's a kind of a wonderful resonance about living from that point of realizing we actually are on purpose, if we know how to read our experience.
Thank you very much. Now, you are doing an upcoming book study on Alchemy of the Heart, and I haven't read that book yet, so can you tell us, what is Alchemy of the Heart?
Alchemy of the Heart came out of doing presentation after presentation after presentation. And after I had done many presentations, I developed a way of communicating this work to people that they could, through mirroring it through their own life experience, so they could look at this work through the mirror of their own development from childhood to adulthood, see how the mechanics of their experiences put together, and see the necessity to journey back along that pathway back into their childhood, and why it's necessary to engage our experience emotionally in a very conscious way. So it's more a perceptual journey. The presence process is an experiential journey. And it's a wonderful book for people that are uncertain about whether this work is for them or not, because they can read that book. It's written in a very simple way. It has very short sections. You know, you can just read a bit each day. But what it does is it takes one on that journey from childhood into adulthood and then back to that childhood place, and explains the necessity for this work in the first place. So it's a good way to inform oneself about this work before even entering it. And it's also an integrative tool. So I found that people that have done the procedure and then read this book find that it integrates a lot of the stuff that they've gone through.
So have you decided when you're going to do the book study yet?
I think we're set on starting from June because I'm going to be away a lot in May. And so we'll start the work in the book study in June. It's not going to be a book study as in we're all going to study the book together. What I want to use the book is as a tool to develop intuition. And, at the moment, one of the most important things is for us to tune into our intuitive, our inner voice, as opposed to the outer voice of the world, also to get an awareness of what's called a second attention, which is what I want to use that book study to assist people to recognize. And in the shamanic world, they talk about the first attention. The first attention is what the activity is happening in this moment, the actual event, and the second attention is what is the purpose. And what is actually going on, the higher purpose behind it, and so how do we live in this first attention experience of the very physical world we're in, but actually still daily function from a second attention, and the second attention and the intuition are very tied up with each other. So what I'm intending to do is I'm going to journey through the alchemy of the heart in a manner in which I will treat the alchemy of the heart, the book, as the first attention. This is what's going on in this moment. I'm reading this book, but what is it triggering from my point of intuition and my point of second attention? And I'm going to model that by journeying through it myself, and I'm going to invite people to enter a same journey with the book. And one can use the book, one can use tarot cards, one can use all sorts of things to develop intuitive or second attention awareness. I'm just choosing the alchemy of the heart because it's set up in a way that one can do a small section every day and see the difference between mental activity of reading something and trying to mentally analyze it, the difference between that vibration and reading something and hearing what the voice of the intuition is telling us about it or what the second attention of that material is telling us about it. So that's kind of the journey that I want to share with people, and we'll probably, do that for most of the year. We'll move through the rest of the year doing that.
Well, thank you, Michael Brown, so much for being on the show tonight and discussing.
You're very welcome, Marie.
Thank you. We are just about out of time, so I am going to say goodbye, but I look forward to speaking with you again about Alchemy of the Heart.
Excellent. Anytime.
Okay. Have a great night, or a great day.
All right.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So that was Michael Brown, author of The Presence Process. If you're interested in checking out The Presence Process or his book Alchemy of the Heart and you want to get involved with the June book study, you can go to namastepublishing.com to purchase the book and to chat with Michael Brown. That's his blog is located there as well. Next week, Eckhart Tolle is going to be on the show. Please remember to tune in and like the show. What you can do is you can favorite the show if you are a member of Blog Talk Radio. Up on the Blog Talk player, there's some little icons. There's a little red heart. If you click on that little red heart, you will favorite the show, and Blog Talk Radio will email you a reminder about an hour before showtime, before we go to air. So definitely favorite the show if you enjoyed the show. Check out more authors from Namaste, more information on Eckhart Tolle, Michael Brown, The Presence Process, all of it at namastepublishing.com. Again, thank you so much for being with us. I wish we could speak all night with Michael Brown. It was a fabulous interview, and we will definitely have him on the show again. Thank you, thank you, thank you for being with us. Make sure that you tune in next week for Eckhart Tolle. And as well, you do have a chance to ask your question to Eckhart live on the air. We're going to be choosing three listeners. So go to namastepublishing.com in the discussions, and you can post your question for Eckhart Tolle. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful evening. Namaste.
thank you for joining with us for this hour of Namaste Radio. For further spiritual insights and sharing, please join us in Namaste Global Community at namastepublishing.com. If you enjoyed the show, please add Namaste Radio as a friend, favorite the show, and tell someone about it. Sharing this show is a precious gift that's completely free. Thank you. May you enjoy each moment of your day. Namaste.